When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, visit BetterHelp.com/stuff today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/stuff.
Hey, and welcome to The Short Stuff. I'm Josh, there's Chuck, and Dave's here sitting in on his own podcast. How about that? And this is
Short Stuff. Funeral?
Right. No, definitely not. No, this is a much more happy occasion because it's an episode of Short Stuff, and what's happier than that?
I agree.
So, Chuck, we're talking about something that you dug up. I had never heard of this, despite living in Atlanta for more than half of my life. Something called Atlanta's Washerwomen Strike. Granted, I was not alive in the 1880s, but I'm still kind of surprised I never heard of it.
I had not heard of it until I went to, you know, the fantastic Oakland Cemetery here in Atlanta every Halloween. They have what's called Capturing the Spirit of Halloween tour.
Nice.
And it is, Oakland Cemetery is Atlanta's, you know, historic, their Parade de la Chaix, where quite a few prominent people are buried. And it's our big in-town old cemetery. And you walk around during Halloween.
Sure.
With a drink. They serve drinks.
Oh, wow.
In groups of like 12 to 15.
That's nice.
And then
perfect size.
It's a good size. And what they have is, I think, five different stories being told by actors in costume next to the graves of the people whose story it is.
Do they tell the stories like this?
They do, but that got really old, so we all just said, will you please stop? So it's different stories every year. They find different stories from the people buried there. And one of the stories was a woman who was part of this washerwoman strike.
Neat.
And Emily and I both were like, I'd never heard of this. What a great story. She was like, you got to do this on Stuff You Should Know. And I said, why are you telling me what to do with Stuff You Should Know? You've never even listened to Stuff You Should Know. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, I'd listen to this if you ever did anything I'm interested in.
Oh, hey, Emily.
She might listen to this one. So I said, that's actually a perfect short stuff. So here we go.
Okay, two things. There's a documentary about Oakland Cemetery. And if you watch it closely, our colleague Robert Lamb from Stuff to Blow Your Mind is in it. He's like in the crowd.
Surprise me.
It's an uncredited cameo.
Wow.
The other thing is, you and I were over there the other day to see, we went to the Eastern for the first time to see a show.
Yeah,
it was really cool.
Great venue.
Yeah. And the whole area, I didn't even recognize it until I looked at the street name. I was like, oh my God, we're like right by the cemetery. It's just completely changed.
Well, yeah, that area is definitely different over there now, but it's 5 minutes down the road. So I've seen the slow, gradual change.
Oh, to me, it was like night and day.
Well, yeah, I guess when you don't go by there, I'm a little offended that you were that close and you didn't come by and like throw a paper bag full of poop on my doorstep and light it on fire.
No, we were in and out. Momo wasn't with us, which means we have 3 hours. We don't leave her in her crate for longer than 3 hours. So we had 3 hours to get there and back. And we got to see most of a Violent Femme show, which was really, really good. And we just didn't have time. Yumi was like, should we? And I was like, we just don't have time.
Well, the only better end was just like, we got to miss the encore, but I got to go throw this bag at
Chuck's
house.
That's exactly right. So, okay, back to it, Chuck. We understand where this idea came from. Thank you, Emily. But let's tell everybody about it, because this was a huge, a watershed moment, you could say, in the history of labor in Atlanta, which sounds way more boring than it actually is.
Yeah, and big thanks to Washington Post has a great article on this, and I can't remember the website, but a very pro-union website.
I think it was the AFL-CIO website, for real.
Okay, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
So to paint a picture of Atlanta in the 1880s, it was a city trying to be sort of the big thing in the South, which it ended up being. But at the time, it was still on its way and had unpaved streets, and you know, it wasn't quite where it needed to be. But politicians wanted to sort of send message to the North, like, hey, Atlanta's ripe for business down here. We got a lot of labor down here that you don't have to pay much. It's not too far after the Civil War. Wink, wink, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And bring your business down here.
Yeah. Like this was a huge push at the time because the South was still, you know, under reconstruction and rebuilding. And at the time, there was something like 98% of black working women, because again, these were emancipated enslaved people, but they weren't being paid very much. They weren't being treated very well. And one of the most prominent occupations of black working women was to be a laundress or a washerwoman. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because it was not fun work at all. And the washerwomen who were performing this work, this service, were paid so little that even like generally poor white families could afford to hire a local black laundress to do the laundry for the family.
Yeah, they didn't have up north. They already had like professional cleaning, industrialized cleaning businesses for clothing, but there were, you know, manufactured cloth had come along. There were just a lot more clothes now. And like you said, if you had any extra money as a family, one of the first things you might do is to pay for your clothes to be done because it was, you know, they just didn't have washing machines. You had to like wash clothes by hand. You had to boil clothes. You had to iron them with irons that you heated up by fire and hang them up all over the place to dry. So these young women were, you know, they started work anywhere from, you know, 10 to 12, 13, 14 years old. And they basically worked for the next 50 years doing this kind of work for $4 to $8 a month.
And that today is $116 to $232 a month, which it doesn't matter what time you live in, that is not enough to live on. And yet
there
are a lot of black moms, especially a lot of black single moms, who managed to eke out a life for them and their families from those wages just by working really, really hard. Because as you progressed and became better at it, it's not like you started making more money. The way to make more money was to work harder and harder and to take on more and more clients, right? So one of the things about this profession, though, I think attracted so many black women was it was one of the most autonomous professions around. Like if you were a washerwoman, you didn't answer to anybody but yourself. It was one of the first ways that you could be an independent business person in the South after the Civil War. And that was really important to a lot of the workers, especially because they had just been, you know, freed from being slaves. Like they had literally been slaves just, you know, a couple of years before. And now they're able to run their own lives and run their own business as washerwomen.
Yeah, and notably, they did this work at their own homes. So they made their own washing soap. They would get the clothes dropped off on a Monday, and then they would do everything all week long and then drop the clothes back off on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. So they're at home. They're doing this work. It is tough, backbreaking work. But like you said, it provided some autonomy, but the wages weren't going anywhere, which set the stage basically for the summer of 1881. I think we should take a break and talk about what happened.
Agreed. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on!
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true? That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so now we're in the summer of 1881. Super hot in Atlanta, hot doing this kind of work. And 20 of these washerwomen, they met up and they said, all right, here's what we need to do. Our money's going nowhere. The only way to get more is to work harder and to add more accounts. So let's form a trade organization. They called it the Washing Society. And let's see if we can get a little more respect and a little more autonomy. And more than anything, let's see if we can get some sort of codified higher pay to the tune of about a dollar per 12 pounds of wash.
Yeah. So this was enormous. Like, this was a huge deal. This is 1881 in Atlanta, and Black women were meeting and saying, let's basically form a cartel, essentially, a washer cartel. And they set up the Washing Society and started canvassing door to door. Because remember, there were a lot of laundresses working in the town at the time. And they managed to grow from that first 20 to 3,000 members of this Washing Society in 3 weeks, just from going door to door. And even more impressive, Chuck, they included white women too, right?
Yeah, which, you know, this is 1881. That is not something that you saw happening a lot, especially in the Deep South. So even though 2% of these laundresses were white, they included them, got 3,000 women together, went on strike. I think about 10 days into the strike, the cops got involved. They arrested six of the leaders and basically said, hey, you know, you've been harassing people with this door-to-door campaign, so we're going to charge you with disorderly conduct and quarreling and charge you these fines that are like, I think one of these women, Sarah A. Collier, was, and I wish I could remember the name of the woman at the cemetery. I looked it up, but they took all that down after Halloween, but that rings a bell. It may have been her, but she was fined $20, which was, I mean, what, like four, like almost half a year's pay?
Yeah, depending on how much she made, but definitely three to 5 months pay. And I could not find out why she was fined 20 and other ones were fined $5. But the purpose that these women had behind their movement was enough that Sarah Collier said, I'm not paying that. And they said, well, you're going to go work on a chain gang, 49-year-old asthmatic mother of two. And she did for 40 days. And that's the kind of thing that other people look at and find genuine inspiration from. And that really helped, I think, kind of solidify this as if even more than it was already.
Yeah, absolutely. So the city council comes along. They say, all right, if you want to be a member of this washerwoman organization, then you have to pay the city a $25 annual fee. And also, if you want to start a commercial laundry, like, so we can put them out of business, we'll give you a nonprofit tax exempt status even.
Yeah, that's terrible.
So we can drive them out of their work. And you know what these women did is they said, so $25 that's definitely half a year's wage.
Right.
They wrote a letter to the mayor and said, you know what? Fine. We'll pay it.
Yeah.
We're not going anywhere. We're not washing any more clothes. We'll pay your organizational fee. And what do you think about that?
And the mayor, his monocle popped right off his face as he was reading that letter.
Right.
And they said, okay.
In his dirty shirt.
Yeah, right. There's like flies buzzing around.
Uh-huh.
So it's not entirely clear what happened afterward. But from what it seems is that the city council backed down and they said, okay, well, we're not going to try to run you out of business. We're not going to arrest anybody anymore. And a few weeks went by and there was this really big deal thing that was coming along, the International Cotton Exposition, which sounds old-timey and backwards, and it was, but it qualified essentially as a world's fair that drew 200,000 visitors to Atlanta, which only had 40,000 people who lived there at the time. So it was a big deal. And the city boosters who were trying to lure northern companies down south were really on edge about this. This had to go really well because this was Atlanta's chance to show it was the capital of the new South now.
Well, and in this interim time period, the washerwoman organization, word gets around, and all of a sudden you have other domestics, you have cooks, and you have house cleaners and maids and even nurses that were like, wait a minute, you know, our wages aren't going up either. We want more money. There was an actual another strike. Hotel workers went on strike, which was a really big deal if you have 200,000 people coming to your small town.
Right.
And employers basically were like, we don't have replacement workers this time. Like, this is an entire workforce of people that are saying they want more money, and we can't just say, fine, we'll just hire someone else this time. So the city council the next week got together. They struck down those $25 fees, and they got their wages raised. They won.
Yeah, I think they also gained control of the washing industry in Atlanta so that they couldn't be put out of business by commercial companies, laundries anymore.
Great story.
It is. It's really cool because these women just basically said, hey, you can't treat us disrespectfully anymore. We're not slaves anymore. We're business women, and we're washing your laundry, which you don't want to do, so you better treat us better. And the South, at least Atlanta, responded, essentially.
That's right.
Yeah.
Good for them.
That was a good one. Thanks, Emily.
She's going to gloat about that, so.
Yeah. Well, Chuck doesn't have anything. I don't have anything, and Emily's gloating, which means Short Stuff is out.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.